listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to On the Couch, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome everybody, as we always are on this Friday, Pacific Standard Time. We're coming through to you live. Getting started a little bit late today, but nonetheless, we're here and we're ready to go. This is your friendly psychologist, Dr. Michelle, and you're officially on the couch. And today we've got a great author guest, as we always do. I'll be interviewing Charlie Bloom. He's one of the authors of the new relationship book entitled Secrets of Great Marriages. Yeah, everybody wants to know the secrets of great marriages, but this is a really different book. This is cool because, first of all, Charlie's wife, Linda, helped him write this book. She's the co-author. And one of the reasons why I wanted to interview Charlie and or Linda or both is because this book is about real relationships. What I really enjoyed about it was that, you know, you could travel through other people's lives and find out how they overcame obstacles in their marriage. And these are all different kinds of obstacles. So you really kind of dig the reading. It goes fast and it's interesting. It talks about 27 couples. So it's really a terrific book. So we're going to jump right into it here, see if we can get Charlie on the line. Hey, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you're at. Charlie, this is Dr. Michelle. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Michelle.
Great to have you on the show. I thank you so much for calling in. I was just leading into your book here and telling the folks that you and, of course, your wife, Linda, are both the authors. So it's The Secrets of Great Marriages. And what I really liked about your book, Charlie, is that it's the real truth from real couples about lasting love. And I really enjoyed it because you kind of explored each couple's stories and how they overcame their obstacles in their marriage. So I really enjoyed it. But I wanted to ask you, first of all, what motivated you and Linda to write this book?
Well, it was a couple of things. You know, we've been in the field for quite a while working with individuals and mainly couples. As you probably know, you get to hear a lot of pretty sad stories and pretty discouraged people over the years. And we knew that there were couples out there who really had created exemplary relationships, and we wanted to provide some real evidence to people who were feeling very hopeless about those possibilities to show them, number one, that it's possible, but number two, more importantly, how these guys did it. Yes. What were the common themes that run through successful marriages? And, you know, so out of our desire to provide that for people, but also to learn for ourselves, what is it that these people have? What are they doing right?
Yeah.
What is it that they are, that they not only know, but they're actually practicing and embodying in their relationships that's enabling them to create these relationships?
Right, right. I want to mention to listeners, by the way, that out there, Charlie and Linda, by the way, have been married more than 35 years. So you're
38 in September.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
You know what? You're living the story. You're living the truth of what you write. So these people are not novices. They've been in their marriage for a very long time. And also, by the way, folks, you may have heard of their book, 101 Things I Wish I Knew When I Got Married. That's a really good book, too, Charlie. I really enjoyed
that. Well, thank you.
It's good for couples who are getting ready to get married, and they go to counselors, you know, premarital counseling, and or they go to pastors or rabbis or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
This book is great.
Makes a great wedding present.
It does. It's a great companion book.
Or anniversary present, too.
There you go. So let's talk about your latest, Secrets of Great Marriages. And why is this book, in your opinion, Charlie, so different from a lot of the other relationship books?
Well, first of all, we don't see it, Michelle, as a self-help book.
Mm-hmm.
It's not filled with instructions about what you need to do and, you know, what the proper way to, the 8 steps towards success.
Mm-hmm.
We don't believe that telling people, there's no generic answer to the question, what is it that you should do to create a great relationship? One of the things that we see in this book
mm-hmm.
is that there's an incredible variety
right.
of ways of creating successful partnerships
mm-hmm.
that really have to do with how each person participates in the dance that they create together. And there's an infinite
right.
variety of possible dances that people can do.
Right.
So one way that I'd say it is distinct is that while we don't specifically give people, you know, the 10 how-to steps,
mm-hmm.
what we do is we give them a vision of what's possible and
right.
a range of the things that people are doing that opens up, hopefully will open up their imagination and their mind to not only recognizing what might be beneficial for them personally,
right.
but also what their specific needs are that need to be addressed. We
right.
don't tell them what they are, but we help them, I think, through these inspirational stories
right.
to recognize them for themselves.
Exactly. That's what I really enjoyed about it. And folks, if you just tuned in, this is Dr. Michelle with you. You're on the couch. And I'm talking with author Charlie Bloom. He's a co-author, of course, with his wife Linda, of the book Secrets of Great Marriages. And listen, if you have gone to marriage counselors and you've been to psychologists, you're trying to figure out how to overcome certain obstacles, this is a great book as well to help you alongside with your therapy or whatever, because it really tells a story. Actually, there's about 27 sort of chapters.
Exactly, 27 stories.
Right. And it tells 27
We interviewed actually over 50 couples, and
wow.
we narrowed it down to 27.
Wow, that's great. And each one is very different and very interesting. Mm-hmm. All the different issues that they have are different, and the way they handled it, you know, is interesting too. So let's talk about, one of the most important points I think you make is that it's never too late to heal old wounds. Now, I worked with separated and divorced couples for a while, and they say, you know, it was just too late to work it out. I was done. You know, I'm complete done. It was just too late. So sometimes I say, no, it really isn't too late. What advice would you give these people who say things like that?
Well, I think one thing I would say is, you know, the person who says it's impossible and the person who says it's possible
mm-hmm.
are both right.
Yes.
In other words, we tend to create self-fulfilling prophecies
mm-hmm.
in our lives. And if we're really convicted about a certain belief or expectation about something,
mm-hmm.
we're probably going to behave in a way that will reaffirm that belief.
Right.
So when people say to me, it's too late, it's over, you know, there's nothing I can do at this point,
mm-hmm.
I would challenge them to really re-examine that assumption. Not that I'm not saying that they're wrong.
Right.
I'm just really encouraging them to take a look at what the criteria is that they're looking at that is causing them to make that conclusion.
Right.
And
right.
if they really examine it closely
mm-hmm.
and do, in fact, conclude that there is nothing more I can do, I've done everything that I can,
mm-hmm.
I just don't have any more in me, then I think that they can let go of that situation with a clear conscience.
Yes.
What I see more often than not, though, is, and I'm sure you've seen this too, is
mm-hmm.
is people and couples who haven't really, truly given it their best shot.
Right, right.
Before they just hang it up.
I agree.
And, yeah.
and I think couples sometimes are so, from the relationship and the repeated negative patterns that they both have,
mm-hmm.
I think they're so beat down after a while. And, you know, like you said, you know, they have these patterns of thought that are repetitive and it's negative and it's not going to happen. And they get up every day and they gear themselves up psychologically to cope with the negative problems they're having. And they act in the same way every day. And they just don't see outside the problems that there are possibilities. They're just kind of coping every day with, you know, what they're perceiving as, oh, this is horrible. You know, we can't talk. We can't work it out. We can't. You know,
and every time we say to ourselves or to our friends, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
It's a form of self-hypnosis.
Absolutely.
Where we're actually reinforcing that belief within ourselves. Whether or not it's true, mm-hmm. we come to believe it, and then we reinforce it every day, and so it becomes a reality.
Exactly. Self-fulfilling prophecy, or, you know, some of the more spiritual psychologists call it manifestation. You're creating exactly
what you're thinking. Yeah, be careful what you focus on, though, because you may manifest things that you really don't want.
Right. And then sometimes when you do, you have to think about why you really did that. Maybe you really did want
that. Well, that's the question, Michelle, because there are always unconscious competing commitments.
Yes.
That are driving us in relationships that we're not aware of.
Yes.
You know, and so it's a great question. Well, why am I doing this?
Yes.
Why do I see things the way I do?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just bad luck. It's not just that the world is against me. It's not just that I'm stupid and I make bad choices. Mm-hmm. But there's something here that I really need to pay attention to that's causing me to create these patterns in my life.
Yes.
I'm not just a victim of my circumstances.
Right. Taking some responsibility
and taking responsibility.
What's the payoff sometimes? You know, I ask folks that.
That's
too.
A great question. A great question. What are you gaining from, you know, because there are always benefits from, even in the worst situations that we're creating, we're always finding ways in which we can benefit from.
Right. Exactly.
So to really, self-reflection is one of the themes that ran through the book with these couples, that there was a great willingness to take responsibility, to look at themselves, to not focus on the other person as the source of their problems or their delights, but to see them as an active agent in their life, a partner with whom they are co-creating life together.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what was so terrific about it, too, is they really had got them working and thinking and, you know, talking about the concept that it's never too late to heal old wounds and stuff. Maybe you could talk a little bit about your chapter about Maya and Barry's relationship, because that was a really good chapter.
That's a very powerful chapter in the book.
You say that a marriage may have to die in its present form to be born into its full glory.
What is
that about?
That's such a vivid example of how two people can come together and create something that at that time, at that stage of their lives, seems to work and to fill their needs, but then as they move into another life stage, that old structure no longer is meeting their needs. It no longer fits them, and they need to co-create and recreate something that is more designed to address their specific needs at the next stage of their life.
Right.
And sometimes some couples can do that within the context of a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Really, basically, reassess the whole structure and sit down together and look at how we both need to be in order to fulfill our vision and our needs at this stage of the game, which is different than what we were like when we got married when we were 23 years old.
Boy, is that profound. You know, so many people, you know, we all change and we have to try to change together, not necessarily being on exactly the same page.
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
We do have to recognize that change is not only inevitable, but it's not a bad thing. It's not something to be afraid of. It's only when we resist change or try to manage it in a way that interferes with somebody else's freedom that we create problems with change. But if we don't have some ability, some flexibility to move with the inevitable change in the currents of our lives, we're going to create resistance and a lot of distress in our relationships.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I hear I think that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to, you know, have the relationship, it may have to die in its present form and be reborn.
Well, that's why I think Barry and Maya's story is an example, an extreme example of what two people had to go through in order to really give birth to a structure of their marriage that could become successful and fulfilling. And in their case, I mean, you know the story, that they actually went all the way to separating and ultimately divorcing. Formally divorcing, living separate lives for 4 years with absolutely zero interest in ever getting back together again. But, and this is the key part to that story that I find so fascinating, it's what they did in their own lives during those 4 years of separation that enabled them to come back together, something that they neither one of them had ever even considered, but through a set of circumstances, found themselves back together again as two very different people that they, than they were when they were originally married, and having done a lot of very powerful work on themselves through different kinds of practices, came back together in a way in which they were more whole as individuals, and then created a relationship that wasn't so codependent.
Exactly.
But it was based on two people coming together to contribute to each other.
That's really profound. You know, I have a personal friend, not a client, but years ago, I mean, 15 years ago, who actually, this is very he and his wife had a major trauma happen in their life when they were married. They were married and divorced twice.
Ooh, that's unusual.
Before they finally did exactly what you're talking about, what Maya and Barry did, to come together and really get their relationship reborn again, to find out now how are they going to cope with this. Now, stop living in the past, mourn together. You know, they had a loss of a child. It was just devastating. But instead of staying together and moving through the patterns with the family and the changes, they went apart because that's the only way they felt that they could cope with it. But anyway, I want to jump into some of the other great chapters you have in here. Now, I have people who come in and they say, we're not making love anymore. You know, we're not, we don't have great sex anymore. Or they, she's tired. She's not initiating it. But I love this chapter where you talk about there are thousands of ways to make love. So can you tell folks about
that? Yeah, that's the Shervin and Mikowski chapter.
Yep.
That's a great chapter.
Yeah, what, tell the people what that means.
Well, that was actually, those are their words, that there are thousands of ways. We found that there are thousands of ways that we can make love. And they really expanded the definition of lovemaking from something that's purely or exclusively sexual to various creative forms of showing and demonstrating and sharing your love of each other. That and in that story, there's dozens of different examples for the reader, just to see how you can build more affection and love into your marriage, and to see that there isn't any correct way to do it. It's not simply investing in the marriage by doing acts of kindness and appreciation, but it's taking pleasure in those acts while you're deepening the connection. So we tend to see lovemaking in terms of sexuality, and that's only one of the many ways that we can demonstrate and share our love.
That's it's beautiful too. And folks, this is a great chapter. If you're, you know, feeling empty and you're feeling like you're not getting what you need in terms of love from your partner, it's not, like you said, Charlie, it's not about all sex. There's so many different ways that you can show your partner you love them and work into that if that's what you need. And but you know, it's a great chapter. What do you mean, Charlie, in your book when you say that great marriages require great integrity? What's that about?
Well, you know, integrity, Michelle, literally means wholeness. It's a sense of being complete as a person. And when we're out of integrity, we're violating our basic nature or our fundamental principles in a very serious way. And when we break our own integrity and we fragment ourselves by doing things that are incongruent with our deepest needs and purpose, then we don't engage in the relationship as a whole person. but as a fragmented person who is needy of something to repair the break in themselves.
Right.
And very often we have a situation where there are two people who are out of integrity with themselves for various reasons, who are not feeling whole as a person.
Exactly.
And they come together, and they're looking for the other person to fill them, but the other person is looking for them to fill them.
Right.
And so it's a setup for frustration and resentment.
Exactly. That makes so much sense. I have a lot of people who are really interested in getting married and want a good relationship, and some of them, a lot of them are young adults, I would say. But there are some middle-aged folks and, who've gone through other families and had baggage, and they say, I really want a relationship. I really want. It's like there's a time clock ticking within them. And of course, understandably so with women who want to have children, but I keep telling them that if they're a common theme is that they're, like you said, they're looking for someone else to fill them up. And I say, you got to get yourself grounded. You've got to feel really great with who you are. And here you have the concept of integrity within yourself, and that's it. You've got to be really filled up within yourself by yourself. I always say, take care of yourself first, and then you can reach out and help others. You know,
that's so critical, and I always go out of my way to let people know when I say that, that this does not mean that you have to have it all together before you can even begin to look for another partner.
Right.
It's not necessary to have your work completely done.
That's right.
One of the things that these couples told us over and over again is that it's all on-the-job training.
It sure is. It sure is.
If you wait until you've got it all together, you're going to die for it, because it isn't going to happen.
Right.
You know?
And I don't know if we ever have it all together. I mean, it's just...
Well, I don't, and I don't know anybody that does, so it's a good thing you don't have to.
There you go, exactly. So, by the way, folks, you're listening to LA Talk Radio, the nation's number one talk station on the internet. This is Dr. Michelle, and we're on the couch today with Charlie Bloom. He's the co-author of the book, It's Secrets of Great Marriages, and little lower case letters, The Real Truth from Real Couples About Lasting Love. And, of course, Charlie is the co-author. His wife of almost 38 years, Linda Bloom, wrote this book, and it's fabulous if you're thinking about how to work through marriage problems. If you are in a quandary about certain situations, this covers all these different situations that you may be dealing with and how to work through it based on real live couples and how they did it. So it's a terrific thing. So let's talk about something else that I really thought was cool is you talk about Kathy and Veda's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell the listeners what you mean when you say it's not despite our differences that we can deeply love. It's because of them. Now, that's a hard one to get a lot of people's heads wrapped around. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, when we think about differences, we think about problems.
Right.
We think about arguments, and we think about conflict. And it's never the differences themselves, the presence of differences that creates problems in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually the differences that make people interesting to
us.
I mean, it's not an accident that we tend to be attracted to people who in many ways are quite different from us in terms of temperament or, you know, personality. It's because there's something in us that longs to expand and be complete. And when we bring in somebody with a different set of perspectives, it really adds something to our life instead of just reinforcing what we already have.
Yes.
So it's differences themselves that create what we call chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that feeling that, whoa, this is somebody that I really, you know, belong with. This is somebody with whom I feel more alive and more enriched with.
Right.
And Kathy and Veda were so different in so many ways. It was one of those cases where it really seemed to us like, well, maybe this is one of those situations where it's just too extreme. But they were able to really exploit the value, take advantage of the value of their differences, and not only accept the differences as for what they were, but
right.
to appreciate them
right,
and to
right.
value them. And each one of them kind of grew into each other's world.
Yes.
And Kathy became more more extroverted in her life. She had been very kind of withdrawn, and Beta became more expansive, and she
cool.
became more interested in things that she hadn't previously been aware of. And
yeah, yeah.
they were able to, well, one of them really wanted children. I mean, this is often a deal breaker
yeah,
for
yeah.
couples.
It is.
One wanted children,
mm-hmm.
the other one didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we know how many couples have split over that one. That's
oh,
a huge
yeah.
one.
It is. It's huge.
Well, they were able to come up with ways in which both of them, I'm not going to go into the details
yeah.
here, but they both ended up feeling very fulfilled and satisfied that they got their needs met, and they came.
Yes.
It was a very creative way of dealing with it,
yeah.
and they got some help in the process.
Right.
But it's an example of how when there's a commitment
mm-hmm.
to the relationship, that when obstacles come up that otherwise could be seriously problematic,
mm-hmm.
they simply become one more challenge
mm-hmm.
to work with that can expand our capacity and deepen our capacity to go even deeper with
right.
each other.
Right. And it, exactly. It's more of an opportunity.
They you know, I mean, I know it's kind of a cliche to say
yeah.
it's not a problem, it's an opportunity,
yeah.
but these people literally
yeah.
see these situations as yeah. opportunities.
That's neat. That's really
yeah.
cool. And by the way, folks, if you just tuned in, by the way, this is Dr. Michelle, and we're on the couch here with Charlie Bloom, the author of The Secrets of Great Marriages. We're talking about, moving through his book and some of the profound lessons that couples have learned. He talks about 27 couples and some of these obstacles that they've had to overcome. What is the something you're talking about in your book, Charlie, when you say that great marriages require a commitment to something beyond the relationship itself? What's that about?
Well, Michelle, we've all seen those pictures in the newspaper of couples who are celebrating their golden anniversary
yeah.
after 50 or sometimes
yeah.
more years.
Mm-hmm.
And there's it's not necessarily a great accomplishment to stay together for 50 years.
Right.
And I'm not saying there's something wrong with that. I'm just saying that enduring another person for 50 years is not the same thing as creating a
right.
fulfilling, enriching, mutually satisfying, loving experience
right.
over 50 years where both people are growing and deepening
mm-hmm.
themselves in the process.
Right.
So the something that we were talking about isn't a particular thing, but it's the ability of the couple to see something beyond merely sustaining the physical form of the marriage
right.
As a crucial intentional commitment
mm-hmm.
in one's life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, of course, we want to stay together, but staying together isn't the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we want to stay together?
Right.
Towards what end?
Right.
For what purpose? What do we want to do with this amazing gift that we have here?
Right.
Towards what end do we want to use what we have here?
Right.
And so it, in many cases, it has to do with a vision of what these people, either as a couple or individually, want to express or contribute or share in the bigger picture.
I think that's really cool because a lot of people, I don't think they think that far ahead. Or I mean, they may say, okay, we want kids, we want to
uh-huh.
keep a decent income, but they don't go beyond into the future. What are we creating here? What are we growing into? What do we want to achieve?
Right.
You know, which, like you said, which is much deeper than just we're going to endure each other for however long, you know, we're going to endure this and just get up every day and go, okay, you're the same person,
yeah.
you know.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, and those couples who can and do see beyond merely sustaining the physical form of the marriage, they're continually growing in their
right.
lives. They're continually
right.
deepening their own lives, and as a result, they're bringing more to the marriage.
Right,
so
right.
the marriage doesn't ever get stale because they don't ever get stale.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's what you you got to keep it fresh. You got to, I mean, can't all the time, but I mean, you know, there really is a responsibility, I think, to keep a relationship thriving, and when you're focusing on your future, to try to keep that fresh, to try to keep it going. What are some of the most important lessons you think that people can learn from your book? What do you think are some of the most profound lessons that you found by working with, studying these 27 couples?
Well, one of the, I would say one of the most important lessons that I learned, it was kind of a surprise for me. You know, having a background in psychology, I tend to see relationships or people's lives very much in terms of what their past was like, and particularly their early past.
Right.
And so came into this project thinking that, well, the people who have got the best marriages are going to be the ones who have had the healthiest childhoods and the best backgrounds. And what I found was that these people really don't have, are no different than the average person in terms of the kinds of backgrounds that they come from.
Hmm.
Yeah, there are some people in it who really had what I would consider very loving, successful, healthy childhoods.
Right.
And then there were some who had horrendous experiences. I mean, like, horribly, and we couldn't even include some of the details in some of the stories about the abuse and the neglect that they experienced. And then there's a, you know, a bunch of people in the middle. They had what we would call, you know, ordinary, normal childhoods, which are some bad, some good. And so one of the things that I really think is one of the biggest lessons is that creating a great relationship with somebody is available to anybody, regardless of their history, their past, their level of education, their ethnic group. I mean, that there are no conditions that preclude the possibility of creating this with another person if you're willing to really be an open-minded learner, if you're willing to do the work that you're going to be challenged to do. If you are willing to be responsible, like you know, you were talking earlier, how important it is to take responsibility and not participate in your life like you're a victim.
Right on. Exactly. I was just going to say that. I mean, and it's kind of in a way, it's really interesting to me the fact that you said that, you know, there's couples who came from really wonderfully healthy backgrounds that just couldn't quite get it, you know, in terms of how to make the relationship better. And you know, being a psychologist, you know, it's kind of the I thought I was going with this object relations theory, you know, and the psychodynamic and everything. I was going, hey, you know, they're suffering. Yep. They were victims or they were abused, and now they see themselves as victims, and you know. But not true. Everybody can, you know, have misconceptions about what makes a good relationship, even if they come from a healthy model.
Well, that was the thing that was also surprising is that, I mean, there were some people in about a small number who really came from what anybody would, you know, just give their left arm to have had a childhood like this. This is like, I mean, one of the people in the book literally was the daughter of the man who wrote the Brady Bunch.
Oh, my God.
And she said she grew up in a Brady Bunch family.
Right. Oh, wow.
And you know what? Yeah. She had her share of challenges, too.
I bet.
I mean, nobody gets out of this one alive.
That's right.
You know,
that's
everybody's
really
got to deal with something.
That's really true. You're right on, Charlie. Well, listen, we're just about out of time here, but I want to ask you to tell folks how they can get your book, Secrets of Great Marriages, The Real Truth from Real Couples About Lasting Love. What's the easiest way to pick this book up?
Well, it's available in almost all bookstores, you know, the independents as well as the chains, and it's on Amazon.
Yep.
So if your bookstore doesn't have it, ask them to order it. But
Super.
most of them do have it. And on our website, we've got a link to Amazon that can get you a copy of the book.
Yeah.
Our website is www.bloomwork.com.
Yep.
And so it's pretty easy to
Yeah,
get.
It really is. So
it's available everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. So we're putting it out right now, folks. Again, Secrets of Great Marriages. Charlie Bloom, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure, Michelle. Oh, thanks for having me.
Great talking to you. Really informative. And much luck to you, and all my best to Linda as well. You guys did a great book.
Thank you.
Take care now. All right, that was Charlie Bloom, of course. And his wife, let me mention that Linda co-wrote the book with him as well. They're authors of the earlier book. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but it's one of the classics in terms of premarital books. If you are thinking about getting married and you know, you want to get some kind of heads up, if you decide you don't maybe want to see a counselor or whatever, you know, it might be a good idea to, you know, check it out. The book's The 101 Things I Wish I Knew When I Got Married. All right, now, engineer, we can put that music up. There we go. All right, this is Dr. Michelle. It's been fun being on the couch with you today. And don't forget, as I always say, you need to take care of yourself first, because then you'll be great for other folks. All right. Have a great day. Thanks for listening. If you want to contact me, you can do so right here on the face page here at LA Talk Radio. My links to my website and also my email address for the show are on that. Take good care of yourself, and have a good one. Bye-bye now.